Hi, and welcome back to the Childhood Development Initiative's Restorative Practice podcast, where we talk all things RP. For this second season, we resume visiting communities and organisations to collect stories from practitioners around Ireland. We talk to young people, teachers, lecturers, youth and community workers, and restorative practices trainers to gather their insights on the impact of RP in their life and work. Each episode is focusing either on a place with several voices or on a practitioner. If you are not familiar with restorative practices, the restorative approach, the restorative questions, and the work CDI does, you can listen to the first episode of season one of our podcast series where it is all explained.
Hi, I'm Dorothy Daniel, Restorative Practice Quality Specialist for CDI, and I'm delighted to be back on the road for the second season of Circles of Connection. For this episode, I met with Kate O'Neill, Acting Team Leader for the Primary Health and Wellbeing Team in the Professional Development Service for Teachers. And we talk about the work the PDST does to train teachers and support RP implementation in schools. So thank you very much, Kate, for agreeing to take part in this podcast. Please introduce yourselves, your role, and briefly what PDST does. So PDST is the Professional Development Service for Teachers.
Thank you very much for the invitation. My name is Kate O'Neill. I'm Acting Team Leader for the Primary Health and Wellbeing PDST team. So the Professional Development Service for Teachers offer professional learning opportunities to teachers and school leaders in a range of pedagogical, curricular and educational areas. We support teachers as reflective practitioners by providing a range of professional development opportunities and supports that enable teacher learning, collaboration and evidence-based practice, particularly with an emphasis on curriculum and pedagogy, learning and teaching methodologies, school improvement and school self-evaluation, school leadership, culture and leading of learning, pupil or student and teacher welfare, and information and communication technologies. So the PDST provides continuous professional development and support through its team of teachers, both primary and post-primary, seconded from their schools that work with PDST. So in particular, I work on the health and wellbeing team with a primary lens, and we focus on the curricular areas of PE and SBHE. So we support school leaders and teachers in areas such as anti-bullying, child protection, staff wellbeing, and restorative practices has also come under our remit as well.
How did PDST get involved in training teachers in RP, and how has it evolved over the years?
Back in 2017, the Department of Education referenced restorative practices in their action plan for education. And from that, there was a link forged between the Childhood Development Initiative here in Talla and the Professional Development Service for Teachers that the PDST would be tasked with taking the lead on this training for schools. Two of our advisors, Deirdre Lavelle and Jared Farley, had already been trained in this space. So really, they were the pioneers for us in terms of PDST and moving forward. So it was very much a professional collaboration between both organisations that has continued to grow and develop from there. Initially, when we rolled out in the academic year of 2018, we put out an expression of interest for schools to become involved in a pilot project. And from those applications, 168 schools applied. So it was clear that there was a real hunger for training for schools in this area. And we managed to get 26 schools to take part, just due to capacity as well. And continuing on from that, I suppose, we look at the sustainability piece with CDI and PDST. So many of our advisors and our associates have come through the Childhood Development Initiative training process in terms of kind of continuing on between train the trainer courses. Some of our advisors took part in 2019 in the Champions training course and again in the summer of 2021. So we're trying to, I suppose, enhance and forge the links between CDI and PDST and to be able to support each other as we move forward with the restorative practice space.
It has been included in the health and wellbeing programme. What's the rationale behind that?
So in terms of health and wellbeing, we look at wellbeing at a whole school community level. But in particular, it's threaded really because we deal with relationships in our social personal health education, even throughout our PE. Relationships is embedded in everything that we do. And at the heart of restorative practice is about building, maintaining and sustaining relationships and resolving conflict in a healthy way as it arises. So I suppose it kind of weaves its way throughout our work, but in particular in terms of our anti-bullying. So the anti-bullying, the Department of Education produced a set of anti-bullying procedures in 2013 for both primary and post-primary schools. And throughout that, the word relationships, the word restore is mentioned multiple times, and the word restorative practice is mentioned there. So in order to be able to provide schools with this training on a kind of on a national level, as we know CDI is based here in Talla, at a national level, PDST were tasked with that role. So very much the importance of relationships within school and the impact that good relationships can have on, as I said, future academic progress, and as I said, just on moving forward.
And what is the current situation? How many schools or teachers are trained in RP currently, and how many can you train per year?
Yeah, thanks. I think it varies from year to year. It very much it depends on the capacity of the team and on the number of applications. So school leaders would apply through our portal, and we try to meet the needs of those schools insofar as possible, depending on the capacity that we have. So we really have an amazing team of advisors. We have 17 advisors across, it's cross-sectoral, so in primary and post-primary. So they're full-time staff that work with the Professional Development Service for teachers. And then we have approximately 10 associates that work on a part-time basis to support us with our work with our schools. And again, maybe we'll chat in a little while around what that training looks like, but it varies from year to year. Approximately 50 to 60 schools per year would receive full training from PDST.
What training methods do you use, and how does it work? What's your approach?
Yeah, so we have had very high quality training through our advisors and our associates, through CDI, again, through Train the Trainer and the Champion ORPs as well. So in terms of what we offer, it's very similar in terms of a very experiential training face to face with small groups of what we would consider champions within their schools. So people that are really going to advocate for the use of restorative practices within their schools. At the moment, we offer two forms of support in terms of the professional development service for teachers. So we call them phases. So phase one really consists of a 2-hour overview of a restorative practice session, and that would be for all staff. So for your teachers, your SNAs, your in-school management teams, your secretaries, your caretakers, anyone that works within the school is invited to attend, because we know that ORP permeates throughout the school. So it's really important that people have a basic understanding of what restorative practices is. Within that session, then we'd look at what ORP is. We'd have a little look at the theory behind ORP, the benefits of it, the values that are important in ORP. And we would get schools to look at and reflect upon their current areas of strength and maybe why ORP might be a good fit for their school in that space. So after we leave after that session, then schools have an opportunity to come together again amongst themselves as staff and decide maybe, look, what might be the challenges with this? What might be the opportunities that we might have? And they would decide then if they would like to go forward for phase two training. And that would be really important to have that kind of local level consensus amongst the staff. So then phase two follows on from phase one, and school leaders can apply for what's called sustained support. And again, that's through our online portal. So the phase two training or the sustained support offers schools 4 visits. And those 4 visits are 2-hour sessions with an experienced ORP advisor or ORP associate. So really what that looks like is it's a more in-depth training using restorative practices in the school. We limit that to up to 18 members, and that's in line with, you know, the work in CDI as well, just so it can be really experiential that we can, with some of our schools that we would work at, we have 2 teacher schools right the way up to schools that have 70 staff. So in order for schools really to take a deeper dive into restorative practices, we need to kind of have those medium-sized numbers to be able to kind of delve a little bit deeper and to be able to address any concerns that people have, or as I said, to be able to work through in a sequential way through the training itself. So there are lots of opportunities within those training, hands-on. There's some role play opportunities for staff to reflect, to discuss amongst themselves, very much what RP will look like in their own school context and how they will use it to build, maintain and sustain relationships. And then again, address conflict as it arises in a healthy manner within their schools.
So you cover restorative language, restorative conversation, restorative. You use the kind of similar proactive and reactive elements of RP.
Absolutely, yeah. We work along the continuum. Main focus around, I suppose, for schools is looking at restorative language and restorative conversations. Then absolutely we would look at using restorative meetings and conferences, but most schools definitely would find themselves in the language space and in the conversation space about, you know, the everyday, the ordinary vernacular language that we would use in schools with our staff, with our pupils, with our parents, with our visitors that would come in and out of school. So it would be very much an overview, but it's always very bespoke. And that's what's really important about our training, is that our advisors, while they come for a 2-hour session, there's a lot of work that happens behind the scenes in preparing for that, because every school context is so different. And that's what's really important, is that schools get very bespoke training that meets their needs. So some schools may be already very au fait with restorative language, because there may have been staff that have already been trained, you know, with summer courses, or have had further studies themselves, you know, in various universities. And then there are others that would be very new to the space. So we tailor our training to meet the needs of those. So every single training session that is delivered is very bespoke. It's very detailed, and we're trying to meet the needs of the school as they present.
Are RP implemented in PDSD itself as an organisation?
On our health and wellbeing team, every single meeting that we have or team development that we would have, we always begin with check-in circles. And that's just to gauge, you know, how everybody's doing in the team, to build those connections and to build those relationships amongst ourselves. And again, then we would, if you have a check-in, you must have a check-out. So that's really important. So every interaction that we would have, we would always begin. I would say as a team, we're innately restorative, but we are also very lucky to have all been trained in this space too. So we're coming at it from, you know, something that has been inbuilt within us, and actually having been very privileged to receive training through the Childhood Development Initiative in Talla. And I suppose that ebbs and flows throughout our work. It remains as part of our subconscious. Restorative practice overviews and elective workshops have taken place within the national organisation. So that's really important, where, you know, we have a space, we have created space within the organisation. The organisation is very proud of its links and its collaboration with the Childhood Development Initiative. In 2021, for example, one team member for each of the various teams within the organisations, that's across primary and post-primary and amongst our management teams, received full training, and they became an RP champion on their teams. So there are lots of teams that would use checking in and checking out, you know, as part of their circles, as part of their relation building, or even for the problem solving process when, you know, they're in elements of design or in workshop creation or seminar creation. Even within our own seminars, we would use elements of restorative practice and the use of circles there. So I suppose relationships are really important to the organisation, and opportunities to build upon, maintain and sustain relationships are valued and encouraged.
What are your main successes? Do you have one specific story you want to share?
Yeah, we hold a very privileged space in terms of the work that we do in PDST, that we are invited in to support schools in this space, be it a phase one, a 2-hour overview, or like multiple visits in our sustained support. We build our own relationships with schools and their staffs as well. And I said, you know, we always feel very lucky. And the team regularly receives emails and updates from school leaders and teachers that have been trained in restorative practices, thanking, you know, particular facilitators, be it an advisor or an associate, for the work they've done in opening up conversations around values, around relationships, around dealing with conflict in a healthy way, you know, if and when it arises. And I suppose when I kind of reflect back and think of my own successes in the work that I've done, as I said, both in phase one and phase two, I worked with a phase one school. And since COVID, they felt that there had been a huge disconnect amongst the staff in terms of relationships, that they weren't the same as they were, you know, pre-2020, you know, that the that it's something that had been of huge value and importance to the staff, something they worked really hard on. And obviously when COVID happened, you know, as the whole world stopped. And it was very difficult to kind of maintain those relationships at a safe distance for everybody. So when we kind of, as part of the phase one, as part of the presentation, there's an opportunity for staff to get into small groups and do what we would kind of call a stock take around how they promote positive relationships within the schools. Sometimes even just have the space to have those conversations with your staff to say, look, what are we kind of currently, what are our current practices here? Because I suppose the initial feeling I got from staff was, you know, that things weren't the same, or maybe management weren't putting the same emphasis on it that they would have had. And that's, you know, that's something that had caused a little bit of disconnect for them too. So, you know, they spent quite a bit of time coming up with, we had somebody who was recording the feedback and someone who was going to feedback to the larger group. And I gave them quite a significant amount of time to get them to reflect and really an opportunity to think, because schools are such busy places, you know, that opportunities to reflect are difficult to come by at times. So this, the staff in total, they spent, and when they started feeding back, it was amazing as I looked around the room and I could see people nodding and those kind of light bulb moments for people where they go, oh yeah, I forgot about that, or I forgot that we did that. And yes, while it may not have looked like it did since COVID, pre-COVID, you know, in that space that we had, because look, times have changed. Actually, they were. It is something that was still valued by management. It was something that was still kind of being worked upon behind the scenes and something that was really there for them. And I think when they came away from that, they said, you know what, actually, maybe we thought, you know, that we were in a much kind of a different space than we are currently. And it kind of, you could actually just feel it within the room, the kind of the spirits just lifted, and people just said, yeah, actually, look, that you know, we are doing a lot of work in this space. We may have a little bit more to do to kind of get back to that where we were. But actually, you know, it is something that's really important to us, our relationships, not only with our colleagues, but actually with our pupils, with our parents, with our families and with the wider community at large as well, is something that it's always part of how they do things within that school. But as I said, with COVID, you know, things happened between bubbles and pods and the need for separation to reduce, you know, the risk of infection. And that had caused kind of that disconnect. But actually they were on their journey. But sometimes, you know, I just felt that they needed that little bit of space to actually reflect upon it and say, actually, we're really doing well in this space. And I think that's really important for schools to acknowledge, because the work that schools do up and down this country from north to south to east to west is amazing in terms of, you know, prioritising relationships and the work on that, because we know the impact that that can have down the line. So I think, yeah, just that kind of that general consensus and that agreement amongst the staff, when you could see them as people fed back and people just saying, oh, I forgot we did that, or yeah, I forgot all about that, or actually that leads me on to think of something else maybe that we could, you know, bring that forward to the next level or the next space, was really nice. And again, lovely feedback from that principal afterwards, just saying, thanks for creating that space for us, you know, to be able to reflect upon where we're at and, you know, where we would like to go and how we might get there.
And what are the challenges you face in your task of making RP as mainstream as possible, and how do you overcome them?
The health and wellbeing team, we offer support in a variety of areas. And one of those areas is restorative practice, but it's one element of our work. It's a very important element. But we design and we facilitate seminars and workshops across a variety of topics and provide very bespoke in-school support, be it a one-off visit or as general support or over sustained support, so multiple visits. And I suppose our main challenge is the capacity to meet the requests that we receive for restorative practice training. So restorative practice training, as I mentioned, it requires 4 visits. And then there is a lot of preparatory work that advisors and associates would do in preparation to make it so bespoke so that we can meet the needs of those schools. And that's really important. So it's the capacity to meet the number of applications that we have in terms of the team. And I mentioned earlier in terms of sustainability between CDI and between the Professional Development Service for Teachers, in terms of now being in a position to be able to internally train our own staff. So what's really important is that every year, as part of a new advisor's induction, so that initial phase when they join the organisation, it's really important to map, you know, where they'll receive their training. So their initial, you know, getting started with restorative practice training, and then moving forward then to their train the trainer so that they can go on and deliver the sustained support as well. So it's really important that when we look at that, you know, in order to maintain, because in any role and in any position, there's always a transitory nature of staff as well. So it's maintaining those very high standards and high quality training amongst our own advisors and our associates as well. So I think that's really important in terms of meeting the needs of schools and being able to have that capacity is to have that sustainable space where we would have enough people that are trained in this space to support schools, whether they're looking for phase one or phase two support. And in relation to our work and our working with schools in this area, in the area of restorative practice, it's supporting schools to understand, you know, that restorative practice isn't a magic wand, you know, and we know that relationships take work. And sometimes, you know, restorative practice can be a shift in paradigm for some people. It's a new way of doing things. It's a new way of how we are. It's a new way of communicating and relating to each other. And to embed restorative practices in school, and there's a lot of research out there that would say, you know, anything from kind of 3 to 5 years and beyond, it just depends. So, you know, to encourage schools to stick with the process, you know, that, you know, you may not see a huge transformation, but we know that restorative practice is transformative in schools, but it just may take time, and to give it the time and the space that restorative practice deserves and to nourish it and really watch it grow, as I said. So that's what we would say, you know, would be a challenge about making it more mainstream is, you know, it isn't a magic wand. It is something that needs time, and it's something that needs lots of support from the Professional Development Service for teachers and having the advisor's capacity or the associate capacity to meet that.
Because you're in terms of capacity for the moment, it's even a challenge to answer all the demands. You are contacted by schools that have already bought into it, like that they're already convinced that it's a good fit for them. I was wondering, like, do you think it would be possible to, I mean, it would be anti-restorative in some ways, but to make it like something that schools have to do, something compulsory in the future? Like, do you think I know there is some kind of paradox in saying that, because, you know, you need to enter in any restorative process voluntary, but is it something that can, you know, that could be possible, you think?
I think, you know, you've alluded to it yourself there in the conversation, in terms of we would always really strongly emphasise that restorative practice is an elective space. It's a voluntary space. So I think it would be very difficult to make it a mandatory space for schools that may not find themselves there. There are some schools that maybe with the approaches that they use to build, maintain, sustain relationships and to address conflict, you know, might be working very well. A restorative practice can be seen as an alternative to that. And I very much think you know, that schools have to come to that decision for themselves, because when we understand the why, and Simon Sinek, you know, a great author, has a book that's called Start With Why. When we understand the why, we're more likely to invest our time and invest our own work and ability into a project like taking on restorative practice. It's definitely something I would like to see in terms of information sessions that might be more open to schools, you know, instead of having to contact maybe possibly the PDST for support or an overview, you know, that's something that may happen more regularly, because as we know, schools often seek support in lots of different curricular areas or leadership and management areas. And, you know, to apply for a start practice in that space, you know, that it takes away possibly from another area that also maybe needs work as well. I would absolutely, I would think, you know, for any school, it's very rare when we go in and do a phase one support with the school, when we do an overview, that schools would say, no, this isn't for us. You know, the majority of the time, schools would come back nearly even within a very short space of time seeking to apply for the phase two. You know, they're very eager and enthusiastic to apply for full training. So Yeah, look, it's a difficult space. It's something that I really strongly believe in the transformative power of restorative practice. But I think that that has to have a ripple effect itself in a school. Oftentimes, when we make things mandatory, it can have the opposite effect. So, but it is something. It's something that I would love to see in various elements, you know, in terms of schools going forward. You know, maybe it is that they focus on using restorative language. They may not necessarily get to a restorative conference stage, but that, or they use circles, you know, daily or weekly, or they use them in their interview process, or they use it in their check-ins at their staff meetings or with their pupils. So even by using elements of restorative practice or parts of the process, I think would be very powerful.
From my experience and from also doing this podcast and going around schools and talking to teachers, sometimes I have the impression that in a way it's far easier to implement restorative practices in primary school because of the relationships, like the teacher staying with the children all day, because there is no exam, because there is probably a bit more flexibility in the curricula, or at least, again, because it's one person kind of designing the whole day, there is more flexibility around, you know, if I don't do the math now and I do a circle, and, you know, I can manage and take the time I want for, you know, having this, for example, a proper circle time or an activity that is building relationships in the class. Whereas in secondary schools, I mean, I think it's fair to say that it's a very exam-focused environment. And then there are a lot of people, I mean, students will meet a lot of different adults during the day. So to have consistency in the way things are done is much more difficult. Yeah. What's your experience of that?
So I am a primary school trained teacher who has moved into the advisory role. And now I find myself in this acting team leader space. So my experience is more on the primary side, but obviously it's a cross-sectoral piece within our organisation. So even our own community of practice that would come together would be our primary and our post-primary advisors. So it would be from kind of what, you know, what we hear about the strengths and maybe what would be the challenges as well that would be on the ground. When we talk about circles, I suppose, you know, Brené Brown says we're hardwired for communication, and it really is at the basis of everything that we do, be it verbal or nonverbal communication. And building relationships is really important, whether, you know, you're teaching children that are four, whether you're teaching children that are 14 or young people that are 14. Relationships are really vital, and they're critical to the work that we do. So in that space, primary teachers, you know, it's a very heavy curriculum in terms of, you know, we cover a huge amount of subject areas, as opposed to our post-primary colleagues that are more focused and very much, you know, very bound by their time as well. And I think it just depends on, you know, putting the value on what you need, because we know when good relationships happen in classrooms, you know, that we see that children are more motivated to learn, they're more academically engaged, the output that we have. Things like circles can be done in a variety of different ways. You can literally take your chairs and put them into a circle. And we would see that in primary schools, maybe more so, particularly with younger children, you might get them all up and sit around on, you know, if there was a classroom mat, or take them to the school hall. And as I said, post-primary teachers may not have that, the time or the space there, but it's very easy to ask pupils to stand up. Let's just stand around the room in the circle. Let's check in. I know in my own school, I would have done a check out on a Friday. You know, we would have put our chairs into circles, and as soon as they would have come in on a Monday morning, we would have done that check in space. So it was already created there for them. It's about linking in. It's about connecting in with children and others, asking, you know, how their weekend was, you know, how did their football match go? Did they enjoy, you know, their visit to their grandparents' house? So it's all about building those relationships, using your prior knowledge that you have. While there are very structured tools in place in terms of restorative practice to help us to build, maintain sustain relationships and address conflict. But as I said, it's just to be human, to build on those connections, as I said, and to make it. We would have a lot of applications as well for a start practice in post-primary schools. And then, as I said, the training there, they tend to be larger than primary schools. So again, it's looking at the ratio, I suppose, of trained staff to untrained staff and how that can move forward for a school in itself in terms of, you know, delivering that message, having your ORP champions that advocate the use of restorative practices in schools. We would see it a lot where it might be class tutors or year heads, and that there are very specific roles within post-primary schools around that space.
Research shows that the well-being of young people is a bit dropping when they get to secondary school. The experience of a child in primary school and moving to secondary school, it's a big, big change of everything. Like, and so I was wondering if it's something that you perceive in your role, that, you know, that maybe the needs would be quite different for primary and secondary school.
Back in 2019, the Department of Education published a document called the Wellbeing Policy Statement and Framework for Practice. And that was for all schools and centres for education. So both primary, special and post-primary schools and centres for education outside of that. And really, I suppose the overall aim of the department was to have well-being promotion at the heart of everything, or at the core of everything that we do in schools, and to look at that across four key areas. So we had relationships and partnerships, curriculum, policy and planning, and culture and environment. So the fact even that we have, you know, that we can thread restorative practice, you know, throughout those key areas, that schools have a space to look at that. Because as you mentioned there, you know, we see the research, we know the Growing Up in Ireland survey and the importance of one good adult. And we know that adult is predominantly a parent. And then we know that the importance of peer relationships for teenagers in particular. But, you know, there are lots of children out there and young people. And when you talk particularly to secondary school teachers, you know, that they may have that one good adult in form of a relationship that they may have with one, you know, teacher in their school, or, as I said, one staff member. So it may not even necessarily be a teacher within that school. And the importance of well-being, I suppose, growing up in Ireland now, and I said there's a lot of research being done, it's a very challenging space for young people. You know, things are moving very quickly in terms of social media, in terms of, you know, moving forward with end of year exams and junior cert and leaving cert and you know, college. And as I said, you mix that in a time of your life when a young person is trying to become more independent, but also needing those roles and boundaries and rules as well. It's a really kind of, it's a really tricky space. And what we find, I suppose, particularly with secondary schools, would be the importance of building those relationships. As you said, somebody may have, you know, 5, 6, 7 interactions with different adults within a day. And how do you have a consistent approach to how we build those relationships and how we deal with conflict or difficult situations as they arrive, you know, possibly around homework, etc., as they move forward there. But I suppose the governance the management structures within post-primary schools are very different to the management structures within primary schools, in terms of, you know, year heads, class tutors. You'd have deputy principals and a principal as well at a primary school level, just because of the sizes of the schools tend to be much smaller. You know, that community maybe, it might be easier to develop that school community, that whole school community, with smaller numbers as it would be maybe on a larger scale.
So, yeah, what are your hopes for the future of RP in Irish schools?
You mentioned earlier on about restorative practice becoming mainstream. And, you know, I strongly believe that restorative practices, when we embed them in our schools, when we use them, can be hugely transformative in terms of our relationships within our schools. And that's really important. As I mentioned, you know, one of my favourite authors and storytellers, Brené Brown, she says, connection is why we're here. Okay, no, like nobody can exist on their own or in a vacuum. Relationships are so important to how we live, you know, and how we grow and develop. And we're hardwired to connect with each other. And it's what gives us meaning to our lives. Even when you think of, you know, times where you've had joy, there's usually, you know, somebody else has been involved in that space as well. So I think in a world where we're more connected than ever through our digital media and our social medias and our digital technologies, there's still a sense of disconnect there for some people as well. So I think, you know, focusing on relationships and the impact that that can have is time that's really well spent in schools. You know, good relationships with teachers help students to feel a greater sense of belonging and connection to a school community. And, you know, it encourages them to participate more actively. You know, they're more motivated to learn, they're more motivated to become involved. And student engagement in learning, we know there's research there, is linked to greater academic performance, and it's vital for a sense of belonging. But we need to kind of move it to the bigger space too, in terms of, you know, our wider school community, our staff, because we know the staff are the foundation of every school and centre for education. And when that foundation is solid in terms of relationships, you know, staff relationships in particular, that permeates into everything that we do within a school and what happens within a school. So it's really important that that restorative practice isn't just seen as something that we do with pupils. And I'm thinking of Van Duren's, you know, relationship window I'm working with. So it's not something that happens, you know, with pupils or with young people, but as a way of being within the whole school community, and that everybody that enters into that school, you know, as soon as they drive into the car park or they cross the threshold of the door, feels that they belong to this space. And I think that that's hugely important. So looking at the role of, as I said, you know, relationships being core to everything that we do at school, and then looking at, you know, how do we deal with difficult situations? How do we deal with challenges in a very fair way? And as we know, restorative practice is all about fair process. And that's something that's really important. It's valued by both adults and children and young people alike.
And yeah, do you have your do you have a favorite RP story you want to share?
I suppose something that I would like to share is for myself and my own restorative practice journey is that I have gained so much in a professional capacity from restorative practices in my own work and the role that I have. But really, you know, restorative practice is a social science. It's a way of being, and you can't really have it impact your professional life without it impacting on your personal life too, because it reshapes how we approach things that happen within our own. So I think for me, one, you know, key learning was moving from that, you know, why didn't that happen in a particular way, to what happened that it didn't happen. And, you know, oftentimes we can have lots of hurt and annoyance and anger and frustration around, you know, when things don't happen in a particular way, or, you know, you've asked for something, and you can become very focused on, you know, what's happened and your own feelings and your own needs. And sometimes we need to step back and say to ourselves, okay, you know, take a deep breath and say, you know, what happened that you were late, you know, to come and to meet me, or what happened that you cancelled at last minute, and to kind of see the bigger picture. To see the bigger picture. And for me, on a personal level, I think it has really helped me to be able to communicate my own needs with others. And, you know, Marshall Rosenberg, who is, you know, we would say an expert in the area of nonviolent communication, and I would definitely would advocate for the work that he has done in this space. But, you know, if we communicate our needs clearly, we're more likely to have them met. We're more likely to enter into that space of collaboration with somebody else. So on so many occasions, I would say, you know, on a personal level, it has supported me to have that big picture thinking. And you would be really surprised of, you know, what happens within your own personal relationships when we move from kind of, you know, the why and the blaming others actually to what happened and kind of stepping out of that space. So I think initially when I was using restorative practice in my own kind of in my own personal life, you know, people are kind of looking and going, you know, she's using language that we haven't heard her use before. And actually it's quite a nice way to deal with things. So I think for me, just in my own personal relationships, and to know that restorative practice isn't just going to be something that benefits you professionally, you know, in that professional space within the walls or the boundaries of your school or your workplace. But actually, it's something that just becomes part of who you are. It's the social science, it's the philosophy. And it's just about how I do things now within my own life.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed our podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to our show.